And so the question is, so what, right? Why go through this Freitag's pyramid? What does this have to do? How does this help us with regard to, you know, storytelling and the problem of evil and that sort of thing? Well, he's getting there, right? He says, while the characteristic features of the monomyth, you know, can be discovered in many shapes and sizes within its nucleus, there resides, he tells us, a single ubiquitous theme, mm-hmm. right? And Brian Godwa asserts that all storytelling is about, and here it is, redemption, mm-hmm. right? The recovery of something lost or the attainment of something needed. Stories are finally, centrally, crucially, primarily, mostly about redemption. So that's where he's headed with this, right?
Frozen, what's happening? Elsa, Anna. Anna's trying to redeem her sister. Anna has thrust herself behind the iron curtain of the doors for her entire adult life. Now she must rule, but no, she wants to escape. She has been untrue to herself, so she's trying to redeem herself. And then, of course, you know, the main storyline of bad guys trying to take over kingdom and stuff like that. So, see, I have children. Thus, when it fails to materialize, every good story taps into the audience's natural longing for redemption. Like the structure of the monomyth itself, this nearly universal fixation with redemption is curious and defies explanation as a matter of some strange coincidence. Nor can it be explained by a slow accretion of literary and cultural consensus. Literary and cultural consensus. Since the global history of storytelling shows that consistently compatible monomythic tales have existed in various times, places, and culture in complete isolation from one another. Mm. So here's a universe, like 2 + 2 = 4, like the stone is on top of the mountain and it's not on top of the mountain is true. These things are true no matter who you are, in whatever capacity, whatever time, whatever place.
And they're found in all cultures, all across the country, all geographic locations. Right.
Yeah. Like pyramids. Yeah. Literary critics have therefore been uniformly puzzled about the origins of the monomyth.
So it's found everywhere, and yet there's, you know, even some isolated areas have these types of things that haven't been, you know, affected by other folks. And so how did this happen? Well, it says Christian literary critics have not suffered from this uncertainty about right. how this happened, right? The idea form of the monomyth is the comedy that reflects a U-shaped plot line, he tells us. Thus, undoubtedly points us to the U-shaped storyline reflected in the grand narrative of Scripture.
Right.
Creation, fall, redemption, right?
Right. You just have a lot big fall in the middle there.
So he says that Barr tells us that all great art contains elements of the true story, the story of the good creation, the fallen world, and the longing for redemption.
Mm-hmm.
Right? That's
yeah. We even within good art, still life art through the ages, there has been kind of drawing on. These divine themes of painting pictures or depicting people in certain reposes that are you're like, oh, that person's outstretched like Christ, and so here's the person sacrificing themselves for their family or for this art picture that they're self drawing Brandon Routh's Superman has those big in your face. Ideas to draw your mind to this idea of, Superman's like Jesus because he's this otherworldly person who's coming to Earth. He's sacrificing himself for humanity that he's a part of but not a part of. And so it's drawing on those very heavily handed. It doesn't have to be that in your face, but, it makes for a good example. So it's good for something. What about the monomyth and a general revelation? How do we make sense that this universal apprehension of monomythic themes? General or natural revelation indicates that God has embedded certain limited truths within creation, within the impulses of his image-bearing creatures. So I think we talked about this with Kostenberger's book, and I think we talked about it here as well, is that We're image-bearing creatures, and part of that is, why should we expect God to be a storyteller? Well, in the same way that we also are storytellers. It hits at home. It develops a tug on your heartstrings, a tug on your mind. It embeds in yourself because you're hearing a story that that has kind of universal hook points.
Yeah, and so we're storytellers because God's a storyteller.
Right. So this image-bearing factor, one of the image-bearing qualities is storytelling. We're image-bearing creatures who seek meaning for their fractured lives. We read, the heavens declare the glory of God, and the sky above proclaims his handiwork. Yeah. So, Psalm 19:1.
And so Bavinck, the theologian.
Herman Bavinck, the great.
He writes, all the elements and forms that are essential to religion, a concept of God, a sense of guilt, a desire for redemption, sacrifice, priesthood, temple, cult, prayer, etc., though corrupted, he tells us, nevertheless, do also occur in pagan religion.
Yeah.
Right? Here and there, even unconscious predictions and striking expectations of a better and pure religion are voiced, he tells us. Hence, Christianity is not only positioned antithetically, right, against paganism, but he says it's also paganism's fulfillment.
Right? Romans 1. What happens? They don't devoid themselves of understanding and worship. They replace the image of the holy God with images of man and creepy things and all sorts of things. The worship aspect in that is also seen in the storytelling. It's replacing the high thing, the thing that they're worshiping themselves or a physical idol that's going to bring them blessing. And it draws on the parallels of a desire for God, a desire for communion, a desire for what the image bearer is supposed to be reflecting in the world. And again, I don't want to draw this too much so that you get sick of it, but G.K. Beale's God Dwells Among Us, that idea of here's the temple as seen in the garden, the tent of meetings, the temple mount, Christ, the church, and the end times. Again, that's a monomyth of what God is drawing out from this overlying aspect that he is saying, look, I'm mirroring it in certain areas so that you have in your mind, this is important. Why? Mm-hmm. Because I'm at the center. I'm important. The heavens declare God's glory and the earth is his footstool. Where is he at? He's situated right in the middle.
Right.
He's right there in the midst. He's right there among the priest, and the priest brings the people in. There's Christ. All these things that is drawn out in that book is what we're talking about here as well, but also pagans are stealing it.